Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another wonderful show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. I was delighted to be joined in studio by comedian extraordinaire Eric Lawler, who co-hosted the show with me. During the show, we spoke to Ken Doherty, of course, catching up with him on all things that happened during the week. Declan Drake does his usual GA roundup, and there was a World Cup special with the one and only Alan Cawley. So it's a fantastic show. You won't want to miss it. Download it now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning, Ken.
We're all good. Thanks. Pretty excited this weekend, Ken. It's a massive sporting weekend. There's no doubt about it. The fun and games are already starting over in Qatar. Not a place you or I would like to be. Can't even get a bottle of Bud.
No.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Wouldn't be too good, would it?
Well, go all that way and sit there burning up in the heat. It's amazing. Like, you know, 48 hours before the thing literally kicks off and all the fun and games are starting, and you just wonder how much more is coming and how much more is going to be facing the fans that go out there. It was warned, but now it's starting to come through.
So that's why we didn't want to qualify, Reg, wasn't
exactly.
it? You know what I mean? The Irish didn't want to qualify for the World Cup this year. They knew that was going to happen. But no, I think it's going to be a good World Cup, though. I know it's going to be difficult in the heat and everything with the fans. They should have been looked after. But I think it's going to be a good World Cup. You know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. Can't wait for it to start. And I don't know. I think an outsider might win it this year.
I think so,
yeah. Everybody's fancying Brazil. I don't know. I think I'm going to go for Portugal. I think they've got a good squad. Ronaldo's going to bring a lot to the Portuguese.
I can't believe you've gone the Portugal route. Is this like, you know, the way they tell us to segue into different stories? Like, I mean, straight from Portugal to Ronaldo and the chaos he's causing over in United. Is that
Ronaldo,
what you're trying to do here?
Ronaldo, Piers Morgan are going to bring a lot to that Portugal team, I'm telling you now.
Yeah, I tell you, that was some car crash, that was.
Terrible, sad, really.
Isn't it? It's an awful sad situation.
Actually, I don't know how you or Eric feel about it, but I think in a way, I think it might be a good thing, you know? Good thing for the club. I mean, he wants away, and anyway, he's probably going to go. It's probably a good time. But it's not nice to be able to part that way, but it might be a wake-up for United fans and for the club itself, that might be a wake-up call for those concerned behind the scenes, because obviously there has to be lots of investment at Carrington and the training facilities and everything. It's just highlighting what Gary Neville has been banging on about for years, you know?
Yeah, I know you're a fan, football fan, Eric. Your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I think it was a carefully orchestrated interview with Piers Morgan. I've always been a Ronaldo fan, and I was always in the Ronaldo camp when it became to the big Ronaldo-Messi debate, and that was purely because of his time at Man United. But I just think since he's come back, it's kind of been downhill. I know he was our top scorer last season, but we were terrible last season. He was the best player in a bad team, I would have been the best player in that team if I had been playing. But I just think he's tarnished his legacy. I think everything's been, like, even that stuff you mentioned there, Ken, where he's talking about the club and he's exposing the club for the lack of investment in training facilities. He knows that that's what the anti-Glazer movement want to hear. He wanted to keep the fans on side by saying that. I don't think he really cares for Manchester United really deep down. I mean, I think the big red flag was that he almost signed for Manchester City. We should have seen back then that was a red flag, and he only went to us when we said, please, will you pay me for half a million a week? I love yous again. So that, you know, I think his interview is pretty disingenuous, and I think it's best for both parties if he moves on.
The worst part about the interview, Ken, as well, was the criticism of Ten Hag. I mean, whatever about, the other thoughts he has, just you go down that road of criticising the manager in the manner that he did and basically calling him useless and not qualified to do the job. I mean, that was just unforgivable.
Yeah, I think so, and he's done really well, Ten Hag, you know, and he's been fair with Ronaldo, you know, even when he petulantly walked off, you know, after, 5 minutes before the Tottenham game finished, you know, that he fined him, suspended him for a week or two, but brought him back and then made him captain for one of the games, you know. So I think that was wrong. All right, I think that, you know, slagging off the team or the manager was a no no.
It's a
bit. Roy Keane did it. Roy Keane.
I was going to say
many times ago. You know, and he's still a Man United legend, even though he parted in acrimonious circumstances as well. You know, but no, I think it's tainted his legacy a little bit. But I think he'll always be United. You know, fans will always remember him as a great United player and the best player that's ever played, as far as I'm concerned. So.
We're huge Roy Keane fans, Ken, you and I, and I'm assuming Eric as well. But it's kind of hard to watch him continue to defend Ronaldo all the time, isn't it? You're kind of going, okay, look, it comes a point where you just can't defend it anymore.
It's interesting when Ronaldo said
that, you know, he slagged off Neville, who slagged off him, he slagged off whoever else slagged off him, but he said Roy Keane's the best captain he's ever played under.
Yeah, but you can see Roy's the bond nice between things. The two of them, the way Ronaldo comes over to him when he's at the side of the pitch and all that kind of stuff, and Roy's constantly defending him. And he's a friend, and I get that, but it just seems odd that you can continue. Like, what he's done now is just, there's no way back.
I think the manager disrespected him a little bit as well, you know. I think that time where he said to him, get on, and, you know, with 2 minutes to go, I think there must have been something boiling up there for quite a while, you know. I think, you know, if you were, you know, I think that, I mean, imagine you, Reggie, going on with 2 minutes to go, you know, you're number one, you're a Driscoll, say, you know what I mean? It was sort of like just showing him who the boss was, you know. I didn't think that was nice.
It felt like he was being managed out of the club. That's what it felt like, and they were forcing him, backing him into that corner. Why do you have to go to Piers Morgan, of all people? Could he not have gone to anybody else?
And Piers Morgan said that Ronaldo contacted him about the interview.
Oh, I'm sure he did, because he knows there'd be such a great interest in that kind of thing and such a big following for it. But anyway, we'll move on from that. We don't want to talk about Piers Morgan, that's for sure. Talk to me about Ronnie. What's going on? 6-0, Ding Junhui.
6-0, Ding Junhui, yeah. I mean, you couldn't believe it, because he's won the last couple of tournaments, Ronnie, the Hong Kong, and he won the Champion of Champions. In flying form, he was flying through the draw until he came to Ding Junhui. He was a rejuvenated Ding Junhui, because he's been sort of in the doldrums the last sort of couple of years since COVID, but played superbly well. Absolutely battered O'Sullivan yesterday, but it was amazing. Amazing match. We've had an amazing tournament, Red.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely fantastic in the new look sort of UK Championship. And we have two qualifiers in the semi. One is Ding Junhui and one is Tom Ford. They're both playing each other in the semi-finals. And Jack Lazowski played outstanding yesterday against Sean Morphy. 6-1. He had four centuries in a row, and he was flying around the table like Ronnie O'Sullivan. It was like a left-handed Ronnie O'Sullivan. And he won in less than an hour and a half. So he's playing Mark Allen, who's having a great season, of course, from Antrim. Won the Northern Ireland Open, final in the British Open. And now he's in the semi-final of the UK Championship. So it's been a great tournament. The semi-finals are on today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the quarters, as you said, names like Tom Ford, Joe Perry, Lazowski, you know, Sam Craigie, who Mark Allen beat. They're not names that are regularly rolling off the tongue week in, week out. So it has been a fairly open tournament. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts on it. Like, is it sort of a changing of the guard? Is there the new breed starting to push through now in snooker?
I think a little bit, I mean, Higgins went out, Williams went out, Robertson, Selby, all went out in the first round. We lost sort of 8 seeds out of the top 16 in the first round. I think a lot of it has to do with the qualifiers being just the week before, where some of these qualifiers would have 2, 3, 4 matches under their belt before even getting here and then playing the top seeds. So that, I think that made a big, big difference. And also the new look of the Barbican with just 2 tables, it almost has a much bigger look to it, a bigger feel to the tournament, almost like the World Championship, whereas last year there was 4 tables at the front, there was too much going on, it just didn't have the right feel, whereas now it's like a real proper event. They spent a lot of money, the crowds have been like packing it out every day, you know, from day one. It's just been absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
Did you and of course see... we had Jimmy White, the 60-year-old, he even made an appearance at qualified, so that was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it had everything, there's no doubt about it. Did you get to see the Irish game during the week?
I didn't, no, I missed it. I just saw a bit of highlights, all right.
There wasn't too many of them. That was a short watch. It was disappointing, Eric, you know, I'm sure you were watching, it was disappointing. I kind of felt we were going to win that match.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I mean, I'm a big Stephen Kenny fan, and I'm defending him. But it's all about results at the end of the day, isn't it? But he is building something. One thing you can say is that we're a more attractive team to watch these
definitely,
days.
Yeah.
First half wasn't great. I thought for the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, we were excellent.
Yeah.
Could have had two or three goals. And then just one or two little lapses again, just one or two individual lapses of concentration cost us dearly. But I'm still optimistic. I know we've got France coming to us in March, the opening of the qualifying. But I think that's probably a good time to play France, the very first game of the tournament. They're coming to Dublin. They're going to come off the back of a World Cup. We don't know whether it's going to go good or bad. But regardless, they're going to be there's going to be a little bit of a hangover there with the French squad, and I think it's the perfect time to play them. And if we can get at least a draw, it will set us off on a good footing for the rest of the group.
Joining me here in studio, and knows plenty about sport, but of course here as well to help promote a huge event that's going on for Derek Monaghan. Of course, Mono, as he was affectionately known, was a Bows super fan, I suppose, the only way to describe it. He was tragically killed in a car accident in August, rocking the club to its core and leaving behind a wife and young family. So this night on the 27th is a celebration of him and Bows, and all the money will be raised will be going directly to his family. And it's a big event, Eric, isn't it? Fair play. You're involved in organising this. The likes of Barry Murphy going to be involved, PJ Gallagher, of course. Tell us a bit more about it.
Well, as you just mentioned there, Reggie Mono was a huge part of Bohemians. He was known as Mr. Bohemians, and with good reason. He was everything there. He was the security, he was the bar manager, he was the DJ, he was the pitchside announcer, he was the first person into Daily Mount on match day, last person to leave, locking up, you know. I'm not even sure he saw a match in all his time he was there, because he was so busy looking after everybody else behind the scenes. But as you mentioned, tragically killed in August. His funeral was very moving. It was like a state funeral. Johnny Logan even flew in, sang at the church, because he had a great connection with Bows, and Mono would be the man who would look after him when he came over, you know. So it was incredibly moving. And when we were at the funeral, a few of us got together and said, well, look, we need to do something else. And we came up with this benefit gig. So Sunday week, November 27th in Vicar Street. It's a night for Mono. But it's going to be a celebration. You know, we don't want to be full of tears and sadness and remorse. We want it to be a celebration of Mono, because you know Mono, and that's what he would have wanted. And as we just touched on there, we've a fantastic lineup, comedians, some music, a live podcast. I'll be sitting down chatting to me good friend PJ Gallagher about his time as a Bows fan, and as I mentioned to you off air there, Reggie, he's not sure whether he loves me or hates me for the fact that I've gotten him into Bows, but he's here now for the long haul. So yeah, we're looking for people to come along and support a brilliant cause. All the money will go to him, his Elaine and his young family, who obviously have been left without their father. And you know, Derek Mono was the chief breadwinner in that family. So it's a small thing that we're trying to do, is give them a bit of money and a little bit of security over the coming months, you know.
It's very sad, but it's wonderful what you're trying to do. So, as you said, it's on the 27th of November, which is a Sunday. So, it's in Vicar Street. Tickets are available in all the usual outlets.
Outlets, Reggie. Ticketmaster, I suppose, is your best bet. But, the tickets are flying out the door now, because there was a big push this week from the club, and there was a few bit of press. And here's me carrying on the press on your show here this morning. But, we're hoping that on the night we'll have a full Vicar Street and a great atmosphere, and we'll all have a brilliant night.
Here. Okay, well, let's make sure everybody gets along to that. Okay, it's time for rugby now. Yeah, are you a rugby fan, Eric?
I love me rugby, Reggie, yeah. Yeah, so I'm actually delighted to be in your company here.
No,
a proper rugby man.
Don't expect too much from me now. I'll do my best, though. But, yeah, no, it's a good time to be a rugby fan. There's no doubt about it. Ireland are, we're number one in the world. We're sailing high. We're wearing that tag fairly well. It's a very odd situation where we're going into the game today as red hot favourites. The bookies are giving us a 12-point spread on this one against Australia. I can remember not too long ago, but it was, of course, we beat Australia in Lansdowne Road in 99, I think it was, just after they'd won the World Cup. Maybe it was around 2000 when they were here in a soaking wet Lansdowne Road in November. So we're going back over 20 years ago, and we beat them, and it was a huge deal, absolutely huge
deal. But as you mentioned, Reggie, it's a regular thing now, us beating Southern Hemisphere sides. You know, when those wins were as rare as hen's teeth, and now it's a regular thing. I mean, even our record against against the All Blacks. What is it, 4 wins in the last 6 matches against them? Like, it's incredible.
Exactly.
And we are number one. We're going into a World Cup year, and we've been in that position before, Reggie, and that's what has me a little bit worried. But I'm also kind of encouraged by the fact that we don't seem to be just such a one-dimensional team. We've got a few ways of playing, and the depth in the squad seems a lot stronger than it's ever been. I mean, there's lads not even in the squad that, you know, you could argue should be in the squad. But that augurs well, I suppose, for the World Cup next year, because we've always suffered with bad injuries at World Cup, and we didn't have the depth to replace the guys that went out injured.
Yeah, we're still a bit precarious in that situation, in one position, notably being Johnny Sexton, and everybody talks about it all the time. There's a great young lad, Jack Crowley, getting his opportunity now. But again, he's there because of injuries. So, you know, Joey Carberry injured again, you know, and, you know, the Frawley and these other guys were kind of being touted as being the next ones. So all of a sudden, Crowley's coming in, and it's, you know, again, because of injuries. So it just goes to show how vulnerable we are in that one position. But apart from that, we're in great stead. And it seems, and I don't want to jinx it, but Johnny's, you know, 37, bulletproof, well able to keep going. So we're lucky in that sense. And believe it or not, he's been nominated for World Player of the Year again.
Isn't that incredible? Absolutely. At the age that he's at, yeah, to be nominated in those terms, it's incredible. And like, even after the last World Cup, we were thinking, that's probably his last World Cup. And here he is now playing as good as he's ever played, heading into another World Cup year. But, you know, he is at that age that we have to kind of protect him. And you wonder sometimes, should they be giving Crowley and Carberry more chances at the 10? Because, you know, with a World Cup, you're playing every 3-4 days. You're going to pick up injuries. Johnny will probably pick up a knock, let's be honest here, you know. And we're in a tough physical group with South Africa and Scotland. And you would like to think that the likes of Crowley or Carberry could step up. And it wouldn't be a seamless transition, but at least we'd have a good option there as a 10, like, you know.
Yeah. I know, look, they've defied all critics, this team. There's been plenty of times where pundits have tried to say, well, maybe this or maybe that'll go wrong, and they just keep going out and proving everybody wrong. So they're a wonderful squad of players. I think Andy Farrell has been a brilliant coach.
Amazing when you think about when he first came in, Reggie, the first few games, they were very dodgy, and people were like, what's going on here? He was obviously working on something on the training ground.
It was the transition from the Joe Schmidt era.
Exactly.
And that's a difficult thing to do, because there's no question about it. Listening to the players, hearing stuff from behind the scenes, they're two very, very different worlds. The Joe Schmidt world brought us to the level and standards that we needed, but it was very dictatorial in many ways, and it was very, you know, not necessarily, according to a lot of people, the happiest place to be all the time. It was very, very, very hard work, as some might say it needs to be, but, you know, everybody has to have a bit of joy in their work as well.
Express themselves.
And with Andy Farrell, they seem to be given that opportunity. So I think huge credit has to go to him. He's also brought in clever coaching assistants, you know, the likes of O'Connell coming in, and at times that needed to be brought in, so there's no doubt about it. But with regard to today's game, they're playing Australia. There's a lot of pressure on them actually for today's game, because they're you know, playing against an Australian team who are very wounded at the moment. Lost to Italy for the first time, and will definitely be looking to bounce back, because they're under massive pressure.
You're obviously a bigger rugby man than I am, Reggie, but I mean, just in that loss to Italy, did Australia play a full strength team, or were they saving themselves for Ireland?
You see, the problem, Eric, at the moment is Australia don't know what their full strength team is, because rugby is gone kind of in a little bit of difficulty down in Australia. It's not the number one sport by a long way. It's probably sixth or even seventh at this stage, behind cricket, AFL, rugby league. You know, there's so many sports.
So it's falling behind rugby league as well.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah. So like they love their league down under. So it's you're kind of they're working hard to try and bring it back up along the rankings, but they're what. In many ways, they're like what Ireland were in the past, certainly around maybe the beginning of my playing time with Ireland, where we were bit players. You know, we could come in and we could have a big performance against a team, maybe cause a shock and win a game that we weren't expected to win, but we weren't consistent. And then we'd go out against a lesser team, put in a terrible performance and lose. And it wasn't really until sort of the early noughties and mid-noughties that became not the case, you know, where we were consistently winning games and we won triple crowns and then eventually get to that Grand Slam, the Holy Grail, in 2009. So That's probably where Australia are at now. They can come in and they can play an amazing game, shock the All Blacks, shock whoever it might be, and then they'll go out and lose to Italy.
Yeah, and so, and they were very unlucky against France in their first game in Paris. So, you know, they are capable of brilliant performances. So, I mean, the Irish will have to be on their game tonight to get the result.
Yeah, exactly, they will. So it should be a good game, but there's loads of great rugby on today, there's no doubt about it.
All Blacks against England.
Huge one, absolutely huge one. Everybody's kind of... England were poor in their game against Argentina, and, you know, deservedly so. Argentina came out and got stuck into them. But they were a bit more like themselves in their last game, and they're under pressure coming into the World Cup. Eddie Jones is under pressure. But this is also an All Blacks team that are under pressure. You know, they went out against Scotland. They were held to the very, very end to get the result. And they're not that big, scary animal that they used to be.
They don't seem to be as formidable as they used to be. It's almost like people have realised, you know, they're human.
Yeah.
They're just like an ordinary team. You know, if you get your ducks in a row, or get organised and have a go at them, the All Blacks are there to be got at. And we've proved that this summer,
And England in particular will go for that big physical pack type game that they have been doing in the past. Now, you know, the All Blacks are tough as well. They're not going to roll over.
We're holding them to very high standards, Reggie. That's why we're... Exactly.
But I think that's going to be a cracking game, Eric. I think that one's going to be absolutely amazing one. I'm predicting a New Zealand win. I think they'll just get their act together. You see, there is what people fail sometimes to remember is that there is the absolute hatred of the Palms. You know,
underestimate that.
Yeah, it's against Australia and New Zealand. Always bring this game out. They look on them as being the enemy, more so even than us. You know, there's always been that history that we say about England being the enemy. I think New Zealand and Australia hate them more. So and also London is invested with Australian and Kiwis. So there'll be a big support base there for the All Blacks as well.
Yeah, it should be a cracker, though.
What a great game that's going
to
be.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're predicting Irish wins, and I'm predicting a New Zealand win. I think that's probably the way it's going to go. There's plenty of other great games going on. It's been a feast of rugby, no doubt about it, but really looking forward to later on tonight. 8 o'clock kickoff, which is a bit late. I'd say there'd be a few lads in that stand to be happy if they can see the ball, see who's winning the game. So we'll see how that all unfolds, but it'll be a good one to look forward to later on. Okay. Yeah. It's been much talked about. Anticipation has been building all along for good and bad reasons, and there's no doubt about it, it won't change for the next number of weeks. Of course, I'm talking about the World Cup and football, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Alan Cawley to discuss all things football with us this morning. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great, and delighted to say as well, Alan, we're in Eric Lauder's in studio with us this morning as well to talk about football and his love of the game. In particular, his love of bows. They weren't there this year. They were last year. I was at the game. The FAI Cup final I'm talking about, of course. We discussed it last week. Derry far too strong for Shelburne in the end.
Yeah, morning, Eric.
Morning, Al.
He loves bows. Big football fan as well, like Saul Reggie. So we're all in good company this morning. So, yeah.
But
you look at the game last week, Reggie, it's disappointing for Shelburne, but I think when you look back on it now and we review it, you can just see the gulf that was, I suppose, between the two teams. And we felt going into it that even though the gap was wide in the league, because of the four games that they played, I thought it would be a lot tighter and a lot closer. But I suppose what we didn't count in was the fact that the Aviva pitch is so big. And in terms of the setup and the shape of Shelburne, and they're very compact, very disciplined. They look to play five at the back with two sitting in front of them as well. And you'll get away with that in a lot of the grounds in the League of Ireland, particularly in Tálaga Park, a tight little ground like that. But I just felt in the wide open space of Aviva, they were carved open time after time. And the quality of Derry City, particularly Patrick McElhenney and the likes of him, they just took over, ran the show. And it was probably just too much too soon for Shelburne, considering the fact they were just promoted. I suppose the achievement was just establishing themselves back in the league. Damien was new to the league, a lot of new players. So the fact that they got to the cup final, it was a massive achievement on their part, but it was probably just a bit too much too soon.
Yeah, Eric, it felt that way. I was at the game. I really enjoyed the atmosphere. I felt, funnily enough, I was in a different part of the stand than I was last year, so I thought there was more there, but you're telling me there was actually more at the Bows game last year. But it certainly felt full, the stadium. You know, there was over 30,000 people there. The atmosphere was great. The fans were in good spirit. But it did feel from the start like Shells were just a little bit out of their depth.
Yeah, I think I'll touch upon it there. It's a big pitch, the Aviva. And even in the pre-match interview, Rory Higgins was telling the media that, you know, Ryan Graydon is in the team for Derry today because he's a very direct winger. It's a big pitch and we feel we can use his talents to exploit gaps in the Shelburne defence. And the first goal came directly from a brilliant ball from McElhenney across the pitch to Graydon, who took it brilliantly first time, squared it, and the striker put it away expertly. So I think I think Derry always had a match plan and an idea that this would happen, and it came to fruit. So good luck to them.
Yeah, and you could see Damien Duff down on the sideline clearly from where I was, and he was frantically, Alan, trying to get the lads going, but they just seem to be 5% off the pace compared maybe to Derry.
Yeah, he's a good pundit as well, Eric, isn't he? He described that very well, Rick.
Yeah, he is. He knows his stuff.
And that's exactly what happened, that first goal. Plus, he played Shane Farrell left wing back, and I think that was a mistake on his part because Shane predominantly plays on the right, and he's a very good player. But as Eric described correctly there, you think of that crossfield ball, and Shane is all at sea, and Ryan Graydon, who had a great game, and that was the main reason that Rory got him into the team, was because the big wide open spaces, and he's a big athletic runner, Ryan Graydon, and caused him all sorts of problems on the day. And Damien's very emotional on the sideline, very passionate fella, Reggie. Of course he's on the line trying to get them going, trying to motivate them, trying to get them to keep their heads up. But because of the setup of Shelburne, it's almost as if they need to score first and to have something then to hold on to. Mm. But once they conceded early like that, and the onus is on them to maybe come out a little bit more and try and play and maybe chase the game. Not after 20 minutes, half an hour, but as the game was progressing, if they did have to chase it, they were always going to get caught out with the spaces in behind. And I just felt Derry were clever and cute. And they're further on in their development as well, Reggie, in the sense that the quality players that they signed, they're chasing down Shamrock Rovers, whereas Shelburne are very much in their infancy and only starting off under Damien. So I think it was good for the league as well that Derry won, because they probably needed that trophy just to kind of give them that motivation to go on and think, all right, that's the first one and we need to kick on from there. Something similar like what happened with Shamrock Rovers a couple of years back when they won the cup and they kicked on and went on to win, obviously, three leagues now. So I felt it was important for Derry to win it. There was a lot of pressure on them as well, because once it got down to the semi-final stage, they were the standout team. And all the pressure was on them. Everyone was saying, you must go on and win it now. Mm-hmm. And that was no disrespect to the other teams that left, but that was just the reality of it. And they got the job done, and they were brilliant on the day. I know Rory really well. As you know, Reggie, he's a good lad. He's a good fella.
Yeah.
Cares a lot about Derry and the team and the club, and wants to achieve and do well. So I was delighted for him as well. And they deserved it. They were brilliant on the day.
Yeah,
and I think it's as you said, Al. It's a great thing for Derry. It's the monkey off the back, so to speak. They've got a trophy under their belt for Rory Higgins' first trophy as manager of Derry, and they will be, I would imagine, the principal challengers to Rovers next season. They've got a man there who's ready to invest in the club, and like the first game of next season will be the Presidents' Cup final between Rovers and Derry, and it's a brilliant way to kick off the new season.
Yeah, 100%, because I know, even speaking to Rory, on top of the squads that have assembled already, they'll go and strengthen again, because, as you say, Philip is obviously investing heavily in them. And they're doing it in a way as well where they're not throwing stupid money at it. He's quite prudent. Obviously, he's a businessman that's been very successful, and he hasn't got to that position by throwing money and making stupid decisions. So I think he'd be the same with the club, but he is right behind Rory, and he loves everything that he's doing.
Mm.
Well, it was a good advertising for the game, no question about that. Maybe Thursday was expected to follow on from that. A big game against Norway. Great crowd, the atmosphere pre-match, the build-up, everything looked like it was going to be on track. I personally felt we were going to beat Norway, but it just seemed to fizzle out on the night, and certainly the first half performance, myself and Eric were talking about earlier on, was a little bit wanting. They did well for maybe 15-20 minutes of the start of the second half, and then faded away again for Ireland. So disappointing defeat, 2-1 to Norway.
Yeah, it was, Reggie. I was in there myself, and I'm not sure what fizzled out, because there was nothing fizzing for it to fizzle out,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
And I just felt the first half was so disappointing and so flat and lacking in energy, and it was almost like a throwback to those kind of meaningless friendly games that we were kind of came accustomed to under maybe O'Neill and Trapattoni. And we've been spoiled a little bit with the Nations League, because at least the introduction of that has made the games more competitive. So we've gone away from that friendly feel. But that game the other night, I just felt it was almost a throwback to one of those games. And you can understand it a little bit from the players, maybe, when you think there's a break coming up now of a month, and you'd wonder kind of where's their head at or the mindset. But unfortunately for Stephen, he's in a position where it feels like, Reggie, he's been judged game to game rather than actually after a campaign or after a year or after 2 years. He's literally been judged game to game, and people are scrutinising it so quickly and so heavily that I just can't, I just don't think he can afford performances like that. And again, here we are having a debate the following day about, is he the right man to lead us forward, is he not? It's so divisive out there at the moment. You feel in the ground amongst the supporters and football people, they're obviously for him and they can see what he's trying to do, but the results are just not marrying up with what he's trying to do at the moment as well. And I think he needs the odd few results to almost just keep people off his back while he can kind of carry on with the job. So it was really disappointing. And now all of a sudden we're playing, as I say, a meaningless friendly against Malta, and now it has huge pressure on it because of, as I say, he has no breathing space. Even you look at Will Smallbone, Evan Ferguson, who obviously Eric will know as well, and they're sitting on the bench. And that's an ideal opportunity to give lads a half an hour, 40 minutes, and bring them on and make substitutions. I felt that was, he was very slow to make those changes in the game the other night. It was almost up in the 75th minute before he started to make changes, which I felt was wrong. He should have made changes before that. But it's almost as if he feels as though he can't make the changes because he has to play his strongest 11 to try and get a result, or else face huge criticism. So it's a tough one, and it's a tricky one for Stephen at the moment. Obviously, I'm for Stephen, and I always have been, but I totally get why the criticism is coming, and there's no way you can defend that first-half performance the other night. It was dreadful.
Absolutely, and I 100% agree with you, Al. I think the fact that he made the substitution so late is a reflection of the fact that he knows he needs to get results, because he feels that pressure after every game if they don't get the results. So it's a tough situation for him. But I mean, it's Malta. It's the day before the World Cup or whatever when that starts. You know, it's time, I think, to blood the likes of Evan Ferguson, Sykes, and any of those newer members in the squad. It's an ideal occasion, and I think anyone who knows their football and is interested in their football will have to understand that it's a meaningless friendly against Malta. It doesn't matter really about the result. It's about giving players a few minutes on the pitch and building and building and building.
100%, and that's what he should be doing, and that should have been the case the other night as well. But because the criticism is so heavy, and as I say, it's game to game. That's the problem. Like, people could just accept, here we are, Stephen's the manager, and he's going to have the campaign, but it just doesn't work like that. And in some small way, I get it, Eric, because he's been there now 18 months, 2 years, and he's been talking about obviously building and all that kind of stuff. And now people are at the stage where, look, you've had your couple of years, we need a couple of results as well. And on top of that, you look at the squad that we had the other night. Dave Odegaard, probably the best player, Reggie, as you know, Arsenal, the best player in the Premier League at the moment. He's been absolutely brilliant. They have the lad that scored the first goal that plays for Napoli, Ostergaard. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have these players as well, you know, and that's the problem.
I was going to say that, you know, I thought this is a very talented Norway side, and Norway have always been a good side. And don't forget, they were missing their star man as well. Like, you know, there's good players in that team. Are we being too critical given what maybe Kenny has to pick from?
Well, that's, I would definitely factor in, on top of the criticism of Stephen, if there is out there, you'd have to factor in what he's picking from, 100%. And that goes back to the debate then of exactly what he's trying to do in terms of develop players and bring them through, which is going to take time. And because you're bringing lads through who are new and young and inexperienced, it's always going to be inconsistent and results are going to be up and down. But the question then people would probably say is, well, how long do you give him? How long does that take? 2, 3, 4 years? Are we just going to sit here and let us have results that are kind of up and down and iffy and not qualifying for tournaments? So that's the wider debate, Reggie.
But the question I'd ask, Alan, the question I'd ask you guys, because you know it so much better than me, is then, okay, tell me, what would the best manager in the world, if you brought him in, do to change it? What can he do?
And that's the thing. What is the alternative? Yeah. If we got rid of Stephen tomorrow and you bring in someone like Sam Allardyce or whoever they're talking about, and all he's interested in, it's back to the O'Neill and Trapattoni thing. Yeah. All he's interested in is coming in, getting results, being horrible to play against, but we get to a Euros, everyone gets drunk for 2 or 3 weeks, but in terms of the development of the football, we're still a million miles behind everyone else and going nowhere. So that's the debate.
100%. And even in that first half the other night, Al, as Reggie touched upon, it was quite flat and boring, because I thought we went away from what Kenny had brought into the team with a bit of bravery on the ball, and there was no passes in between the lines. It was only in the second half, when the second half started, I think Dara O'Shea put a ball through the lines to Brown, and we were on the front foot and we got in behind Norway, and all of a sudden we started creating chances. And I just think in that first half we kind of forgot what had made the Kenny team look so attractive, because they were more braver on the ball. It did hark back to the O'Neill and Trapattoni days, but sideways passing, backwards passing.
And the second half was very good.
Yeah,
it
was.
That first 20-25 minutes, exactly as you say, was what we've seen under Stephen, and that's the way Stephen wants to play and get us going. And to be fair to him as well, it's admirable, Reggie. He'll never criticise the players. Mm. Even though there was a couple of mistakes or whatever the other night, he'll never criticise the players. And here we are speaking about if they're a limited bunch and they're playing in the championship, and Martin O'Neill used to run them into the ground and was so kind of negative towards the players, where Stephen will never ever do that. And that's admirable in itself.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on from that. There's been a huge amount of debate about the event that's starting tomorrow with the World Cup. And a ball hasn't even been kicked yet, Alan, and it's already up in controversy. Sponsors aren't happy. Fans aren't going to be happy. Qataris have done a U-turn on promises that were made. The fans can't get a beer, and people might think, oh, it's not the biggest thing in the world. You know, the point is, it could be indicative of what more there is to come throughout this event. And the football is all of a sudden really starting to feel like it's going to play second fiddle in this whole event. And once again, you have to ask questions about why was this allowed to happen?
That's the big question. Why was it allowed to happen? I think we all know and we all have our ideas as to how it happened, Reggie. And we're too far down the line now. Here we are a day out from it. And it's about to kick off. It's about to happen. As you said, the U-turn that was made, was it yesterday, on the drink? And even though people, that's the least of the issues that are going on over there in terms of can people have a pint. But if you think of a World Cup, it's an event. It's one of the best events of any sporting occasion all throughout our kind of year, or whatever year it's been hosted. And it's through the summer and people go to enjoy themselves. And having a drink is part of that. So that's the least of the problems, Reggie. Obviously, the human rights issues, as everybody knows, the LGBT community as well. It should never have happened here. And then when you do bring it to the football, it just feels wrong even the time of year that it's on and where it's been hosted. Yeah. I love football, as you know, as more than any man that you could think of. And I just can't get the feeling for this whatsoever. Now, I'll watch it, but in terms of the time of year that it's on at, the players being flogged, that they're playing every 3 days in terms of their Premier League season, and here they are being flown out to this place a week ago and into the heat as well, and tried to get accustomed to the heat in 4 or 5 days and go out and play matches every 3 or 4 days as well. It's just all wrong and it's a step too far.
And so many big players missing as well from the World Cup, Al, because of the timing, because they've been playing so many matches to fit in before the World Cup started. We've lost so many top stars who should be, you know, on the biggest stage in world football and they're out through injuries.
100%, Eric. I have a feeling as though they're just flogging the players at the moment, you know. Yeah. And people will argue in terms of, oh, well, they're getting well paid and the money. Of course they're getting well paid and the money, but they're not robots either, you know. And then it takes away from the spectacle for us tuning in as fans, that if you're being flogged every 3 or 4 days trying to play a match at the highest level and up to peak performance, of course it's going to take its toll at some point. And of course you're going to pick up injuries like we see. And there's no time in between for lads to recover for injuries, and they're missing out on the greatest probably achievement of their career to get picked for a World Cup. So it's all wrong on so many levels, Reggie. I don't even know where to start in terms of the criticism.
Here we are. So with that in mind, here we are. It's starting tomorrow. I'm looking through the groups. Who do you think is going to push their way through? If you look at Group B, England, they've got Wales, Iran, USA. USA could be a bit of a dark horse in that one, but I mean, England obviously stand out favourites in that group. You know, are we looking at any shocks anywhere along the line?
No, I was going through it there the last couple of days, Reggie, and just with the groups, the toughest group for me is Group G. So you have Brazil, Serbia and Switzerland, and obviously Brazil are one of the favourites. it's going to be really interesting to see them. But the problem for Brazil and Argentina is because of COVID in the last 2 or 3 years, they haven't played any of the top European teams. So it's hard to gauge in terms of where they're at compared to the European teams, the top European teams. And we won't find out until maybe they meet one now in this tournament, because they've been playing all the South American teams over and over the past 2 or 3 years and beating them. And they've a very good record, and they've a lot of momentum coming into the tournament, Brazil, as do Argentina, who were unbeaten in 36 games. But we won't know the measure of them until we see them maybe against a Spain or a Germany or an England or whoever. But they are down as the favourites, and you look at Brazil's team as well, which will be really interesting, and Casemiro, who's been very good since he's come from Man United as well, and everybody will know him from Real Madrid, but he basically sits in front of the back four like he does for Man United, but it allows them to get all their attacking players in, and the emergence of Rafinha, Richarlison, Vinicius Junior, Paqueta, who people will know, who's just signed for West Ham. It's almost taken the pressure off Neymar a little bit, because they were so reliant on him and he was carrying so much hope on his shoulders. And I think it's been a huge positive for them, the emergence of those young players. Something similar with Argentina. You look at Messi and exact same as Neymar, all the pressure on him.
That's not an easy group. That's not Mexico. That's not an easy group, that one, Group C. Mexico, Poland, Saudi Arabia, you know, obviously. But Argentina, they've got their hands full in that group.
Yeah, they do, Reggie. There's a question mark over Raul Jimenez. Obviously, hasn't played a lot with Wolves, and he won't be there with Mexico. So I think that takes away massively from them. And of course, Poland with Lewandowski, there'll be a lot of pressure on him. But I think Argentina will come through that group all right. Yeah. But the question mark I have then is, if they come through the group, which they will, in Group D, they'll face either France or Denmark. And Denmark, for me, are the dark horses.
Yeah.
Denmark could actually top the group. And if they top the group, France will be second, and it'll be France and Argentina, and that'll be a hell of a game for a group six, for a round 16. So it's very open, Reggie. You go through the groups. As I'm saying there, the only tricky group I see is Group G, because one of the big nations, it'll be Serbia or Switzerland, I think, will go out.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be Switzerland, because I think Serbia are dangerous, obviously, with Mitrovic as well. But you look at all the other groups and you would think the two standout teams in each group should come through.
What about the African nations, Alan? You know, I watched their football. The brand of football they play is incredible. When you see the championships, and you're kind of going, yeah, look at the speed of that game and the quality and the skill levels. Who do you think are the dark horses in the African nations?
Well, I think Senegal are very strong, but of course the problem they have is Sadio Mane. I know now he's been named in the squad. They're hoping he might be fit for the third group game.
No, they actually, Al, just on, there was news last night that they assessed the injury and they were hoping that he would, but he's had to pull out completely because it's a ruptured ligament in his knee, so he's out for the whole tournament.
Yeah, well, it's that's a massive loss. And it goes back to your point there, Eric, about the best players and all he achieved. He scored that winning penalty in the playoff to get them there, yeah, and everything. Mm. And here he is now missing out because of an injury a couple of weeks ago. So
he's so good. You can see how good he was, Al, by the fact of how much Liverpool have missed him this season.
And to answer your question, Reggie, of the ones who the African teams, Senegal would have been the ones that you would have been looking at that might have been a danger to a lot of teams in the tournament. But without him, I just can't see it. They're in a group with Netherlands, Qatar, Ecuador. And Ecuador are dangerous enough. They're a young team. People will know a couple of the players from Brighton, Moises Caicedo, who's an excellent player. Estepunian as well, who's a little winger. And they're a young side. I think the last time the under 20 African championships or South American championships was on, they were one of the teams that performed really well, Ecuador. So they'll be dangerous in terms of those other South American teams. But I think Senegal from the African side would probably be the best of them, but without Mane, I just can't see them. And no African team has got by the quarter final stage ever as well, Reggie. So
yeah, yeah,
it'll be the European teams and what Brazil and Argentina can do.
Well, Samuel Eto'o disagrees with you, Al. He reckons the final will be between Cameroon and Morocco.
Okay. Well, I'd like to think Samuel Eto'o is a better footballer than me, but I'm a better pundit than Samuel.
Yeah, and you're much better fashion sense as well. No question about that.
But there's on that African thing as well, Reggie. Chris Hughton is actually involved in the World Cup, and he's acting as an advisor to Otto Addo, the Ghana manager. So there's an interesting fact.
Wow. So Ghana can be our second team.
Well, there you go now. Yeah. And they have Thomas Partey as well, Reggie.
Yes.
Performing so well for Arsenal.
I have 60 seconds. I want you to talk to me about England. They get all of the tabloid press and the Barmy army behind them. How are they going to fare in this World Cup?
I just can't see it because of the heat, Reggie. The brilliant attacking players, as we know, going forward. It depends how I suppose, aggressive Southgate is in his lineup. We all know that he's a very conservative manager and he likes to play that three on with wing-backs, and it becomes a five nearly, and they're quite defensive. But with the introduction of Bellingham into midfield, I think that'll add massively to them with the attacking talent that they have. The big question is, if he plays Maguire, they have no chance. And he's a very loyal manager, and I just think he has to make that change to have any chance. And the huge thing that's against England, and I was looking at a video during the week, Reggie, the heat. The players look, there was a training session and they were going over to this kind of cooling machine at the side of the pitch, and the players looked out on their feet.
Yeah, I think we just don't realise that intensity of heat and what that's going to be like.
And but the humidity on top of it.
Absolutely.
That's the hardest part, you know.
Thank you, Reg. Yeah, a good weekend for capital sides in their respective Leinster Championship matches. Congratulations to the ladies of O'Dwyer's from Balbriggan, who last Sunday claimed the Leinster Ladies Junior Club Football Championship title with a 4-8-7 success over Muckalee of Kilkenny. That one played down in Baldinglass. Next up for the Dublin and now Leinster champions is the All-Ireland semi-final next week, where they will face Salthill Knocknacarra from Galway. St Vincent's, our senior camogie queens, are in the Leinster final tomorrow afternoon. The Merino ladies beat Thomastown of Kilkenny at home at Parknave Inchin last Saturday, 5-11-1-11, to set up tomorrow afternoon's decider with Wexford Queens Owlart the Balla. The game throws in at 1:30 and will be played at Carlow's Southeast Technological College Park. We here at Dublin's Talking Sport take the opportunity of wishing everybody connected with Vincent's every success in their endeavours tomorrow afternoon to bring the provincial title back to the capital. Kilmacud Croke's hurlers, they secure their last four place in the Leinster Club Senior Hurling Championship. The back-to-back Dublin champions overcame 14-man Clough Balachalla of Laois at Parnell Park to book a Croke Park date next Sunday afternoon with St Mullins of Carlow in the last four. GAA indeed has confirmed a 3:15 start for that particular game. The Stillorgan men last week overcoming the Laois champions 2:18-1:12. Both goals in the first half from Bernard Scanlon and Oisín O'Rourke. Meanwhile, Croke's footballers continue the defence of their Leinster club title this evening. Port Arlington of Laois stand in their way of a return to GAA headquarters on the first Sunday in December for the provincial final. 7:00 is the start time there at Croke Park this evening. And like St Vincent's, we take the opportunity to wish Robbie and the boys all the best in their endeavours there this evening. Good news for Nafina's footballers during the week. After the disappointment of losing the county final to Crokes, the Moby Road men made a back-to-back victories in the AFL Division 1 season. 16-2-6, they claimed the 2022 version of the competition at Parnell Park last Wednesday night over St Jude. So congratulations to them on that particular achievement. Elsewhere in Dublin news, Pat Gilroy, as we know now, is back in Dublin football. That was confirmed on Wednesday. The 2011 All-Ireland winning Boston, of course, former hurling manager as well, bolstering Desi Farrell's backroom team ahead of the start of the Allianz National Football League Division 2 campaign against Kildare at the end of January. And a third member of the Dublin All-Ireland winning team of 1995, Jason Sherlock, is back in football as well. He has joined Westmead as a performance coach in the backroom team assembled by a Westmead legend there, Desi Dolan. So the best of luck to J.O. in his new position down there in the Lake County as well. Finally, this week we wish every success this evening to two of our ladies footballers who have been nominated for TG Cahir All-Star Awards. The ceremony takes place at the Bonnington Hotel later, and Carla Rowe of Clonwira and Nafina ace Leah Caffrey are amongst the nominees for the Gongs. And the best of luck there to both girls.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.